ERP comes into picture with well integrated functional modules, with centralized database, unlike legacy system which had the siloed databases or the siloed islands of data. And the third is the processes that are incorporated in a ERP which are uniform and have the industry best practices which are incorporated. Now what do I mean by that is, say if I am a manufacturing organization and I have my set of procedures, I ensure that these are as per the industry standards, and ERP helps me to do that. And similarly, for companies who have just started or who are on the learning curve, can actually adopt to those industry best practices so that even their processes are aligned. So ERP helps you to address that. And third, and the most critical point, is the changing business landscape. The current technologies and architecture which are there in the market make the maintenance cost or the enhancement cost really high, so that there should be a need to actually balance the cost, but at the same time incorporate the newer technologies. ERP also helps to manage the complex business processes and the data to provide the ability for the decision makers to arrive at the right set of decisions. And ERP, as we mentioned, that they are modular and they have to be a part of a well-architected framework so that the communication and the sharing of information can be seamless. Just to summarize the need of the ERP, three things. One is focus on the customer and ensure that we meet and exceed the customer expectations. Second is design IT systems which are really agile in nature. And third, and the most important, as I mentioned, is incorporate the changing business landscape into the ERP system. So if I have to compare the legacy systems versus the systems which run on ERP solutions, so the legacy systems are more function aligned and they're more function specific without taking into account the entire organization. But in ERP, there are function specific modules. Second is the different technologies which are used in the legacy system, but in ERP, it's a well-architected framework, as we spoke about. The legacy system, there is little or very minimal integration between the different functions, but in ERP, all the modules have to be fully integrated, and that is the heart of every ERP system. Because in a legacy system, there are different business units which function as individual islands. They have their own databases and they have their own reporting standards, but in ERP, it's a common master database, and all the reporting standards are also standardized. Last is the data redundancy. Because the data is maintained at different levels, the redundancy and the cost to maintain that data is really high. Whereas in ERP, because there is a central database, you can actually sync up that database with a backup database, and you can actually reduce the cost of saving that data. And this is a very simple diagram to actually see how ERP really functions. So a person, basically a owner of the company, goes to a sorcerer to say, how will my organization grow? And you can see that there are different functions in this. So there is material management, there is sales group, production, finance, but then they're all working as individual islands, right? So this gives you an answer that, you know, you cannot really expect growth if all the functions work without any interdependency on each other. And let us take the example of a pharma company where say there is a paper trail that is going on in the organization, where there is a paper order and it has to be fed into the system, but then all the different processes have to be linked together. So say for example, if there are some critical suppliers that need to be sensitivized about order, then an email notification has to go to them, or the SCM team has to be sensitivized that, you know, for this particular order, these are the inventory or the raw material that are needed, and since this raw material is a rare commodity, then probably those kind of suppliers have to be sensitivized, and they should be asked to get the things in time. Similarly, the shop floor has to be geared up. The inventory or the backend system has to be geared up. So what I mean is the data warehouse or the actual warehouse has to have that space to house that kind of inventory. So that, you know, everything has to work together. No company would actually, you know, truly know the status of any order at any given point in time if all the functions are not really working together. So say for example, to get into the warehouse computer system and to see whether the item has been shipped or not, right, it is really important. And although these might seem very trivial things, but then if you talk about organization which has a real really high scale, right, then these things do really matter. Now say we spoke about companies like Amazon or Flipkart which are into the e-commerce business. Now how are these companies successful? They are successful because they have a very strong procedure or a very strong ERP system which helps them to drive their procedures in place. So say if there are huge warehouses, right, say for example a retail company or a FMCG company, let me take you through an example of a FMCG giant, say a company which makes toothpaste, right. Now a very simple thing, right, if the toothpaste stocks, the inventory stocks are down, then that particular signal has to go back to the system saying that the inventory has gone down, but there is demand in the market, so that demand forecasting is taken into account. You've taken into account the inventory, and then this information has to seamlessly spread to the suppliers, to the finance function, to the SCM function, so that the contracts can be negotiated, or probably at the same price the contracts can be re-awarded, and the entire machinery should start working together. So just the need, the case for the pharma organization, the ERP helps to remove the old stand computer systems in the finance, HR, manufacturing, by bringing them together, and the different functions would work together so that each department can look into the kind of information that is available from the system and not just work through the different systems altogether. Okay, now let us look at the evolution of ERP. So we spoke about MRP1, MRP2. So the first set of applications were basically the homegrown applications, and their COBOL and Fortran, I think these are age old things that were used, but then they were really creating an impact during the 1960s and the 70s. Then came the era of MRP or the material resources planning, and then there was MRP2 which addressed the needs, which actually addressed the shortcomings of MRP1. And finally what we saw was the ERP, and now what we see is the next generation of ERP which incorporates the disruptive technologies that are present in the market, right. So just to sum up, you can see from the table, the 1960s era, it was the era of in-house custom applications, and it was also serving the purpose because the businesses were less complex by that nature. In the 1970s was the MRP1, which took care of the demand forecasting and incorporated the demand forecasting into the system. Then the 1980s was the MRP2, which could address the shortcomings of MRP1. And then came the ERP, which addressed the entire needs, where the different functions were integrated in the organization. Now what we see are the extended ERP. This could be cloud-based ERP. This could incorporate the different machine learning and analyzing the customer behavior in the market, right? So as and when the businesses evolve, the IT systems and the enterprise solutions also have to evolve, and that you can see from the evolution history of ERP. Right now, we saw ERP as a concept. We saw how it spans across the organization, be it terms of connecting the partners, vendors, and also the end customers. Remember the block diagram that we spoke about? On the left, we had the customers. On the right, we had the vendors and the partners. And in the middle, that was the centralized database and the internal functions. So ERP, we saw ERP as a function. We saw the need for ERP to cater to the customer needs, align the business outcomes, and ensure that the IT systems are agile so that the disruptive technologies can be incorporated. We then saw the evolution of the different technologies, starting with the 1960s with the homegrown applications to MRP1, MRP2, ERP, and the next level of ERP. We will now see what is the actual scope of ERP, the different kinds of categorizations of the ERP, and then we'll dive deep into some of the ERP that are present in the market. We'll see their market share, how the typical architecture of a ERP is, and we'll continue this exciting journey ahead. Okay, so let us look at the scope of ERP applications. While the first generation ERP products confined themselves only to core manufacturing functions, the current generation of ERP applications automate and support a range of administrative and operational business processes across multiple industry segments, depending upon the nature of the business, the scale of the business, and the different customer facing or the administrative tasks and the workflows that go inside the organization. So the boundary of the ERP is usually smaller than the boundary of the organization. In terms of the entire supply chain, so we know for sure that it has to incorporate everything, right? But then organization, suppliers and distributors and partners, when they are brought onto a common platform, that means that even their specific IT systems have to get integrated. Just to give you an example, suppose if I am a pharma company, my ERP system and my core application has to get integrated with my supplier's application. This involves a lot of security threats as well, so that the ERP has to be smart enough. It has to be designed and architected properly so that there are no security challenges as such. So essentially, ERP is developed so that it can integrate and automate all the major task force in organization, and it could integrate the business on a real-time scale. So real-time is important so that the customer information can be captured and the business processes can be adopted accordingly. So just to summarize the key benefits of the ERP from the business process perspective, one is it helps you to streamline the business processes and the workflows. The first step in the ERP rollout is to streamline the business processes, and subsequently the framework of ERP prevent them from breaking down. Second is a cost rationalization. It helps you to reduce the cost. Third is reduce the cost of quality. Now, quality assurance and the quality checks are a major factor in every company. So it helps you to reduce the cost of those quality checks. And fourth is it helps to have higher resource utilization, and so that you can have employee productivity. In terms of controls, a complete authorization and approval system can be in place, so that if a order comes, then someone approves it, it goes to the next stage. It provides a greater accuracy of that information, and controls can be more effective in nature, so that a person's roles and responsibility basis that he can access those systems. From the senior management perspective, they are more interested in knowing the reports and the financial health of organization. So different cross-functional MIS can be derived from it. The planning, forecasting, budgeting on a very accurate scale, taking into account the nature of the business, the times of the business. So say for example, if a company or a AC manufacturer, the production has to really scale up during the summertime, or in fact before the summertime, when summer is just about to hit, right? And during the winter months, it can really slow down. So this kind of cyclical nature of the business is also very key, and it plays a key role when the production has to happen, so that these factors can be incorporated in the production units. From a data perspective, it helps you to standardize the masters so that there are no redundant entries in the customer database. Ensure that this database can be accessed by everyone in the organization, again basis the roles and responsibilities. From a time perspective, it helps you to get that data available to everyone in a quick time, and a better response can be provided. And then there are obviously the intangible benefits that everyone works for, is the improved customer response times, the faster time to market, the reduction in the paper trails that go on, right? So these are some of the intangible benefits. So let us look at the benefit of a ERP system from an operation management perspective, right? So someone who is a plant head, who is taking care of the day-to-day operations of the particular manufacturing location. So how ERP helps to ensure that he has a good work-life balance and he actually enjoys his work, right? So some of the benefits is the reduction of the inventory. Now this is a real critical point. If a company stocks up on its inventory and there is actually less sale in the market, then that inventory is actually of no use. That inventory has a cost. It's the inventory cost, right? Because you have your final product in which is lying in your inventory, which is ready to be consumed, but it is actually not getting consumed. So it's a big worry for the company. So it helps the organization, the operation manager, to actually plan the inventory. Second is productivity improvements in terms of the different processes, better order management cycle, reduction of the financial cycle, right? So how the books of accounts can be closed, overall IT spend reduction, and reduction in terms of the procurement cost. There are other benefits which include improvements in terms of the cash management, the end-to-end supply chain or the logistics reduction in terms of the hardware and the software costs that are involved. The on-time delivery helps you to improve the customer it helps to improve the customer satisfaction, and overall it helps to have a very good mood in the organization, because employees are the key for every organization, right? So if there are the set of procedures which are working well, so what helps is that the employees are not really stressed on the production floor. People really feel happy about it. So overall you are actually raising the happiness index in the organization. From a technical standpoint, ERP are a complete suite of the integrated applications as we spoke about. So it has a single master database which is integrated with all the different modules. There's data integrity so that the data is common across the different organization units. There is data sharing, but with a lot of security. We spoke about the roles and responsibilities and the role-based access controls that can be incorporated. The modular structure of the entire database and the different modules. And the last is the common architecture in the technology, which helps to bind everything together so that all the cross-functional teams can actually access it. At the same time, if every good thing has some shortfalls, right? So ERP also has some limitations or drawbacks, and let us look at those. So one is ERP, yes, it's a superb solution. It helps to address the organization needs. It helps you to get closer to the customers, but then it comes at a very huge cost, right? The time to implement a ERP solution is also really, really very high. You need a very skilled partner to actually implement a ERP solution. So the cost of implementation, the cost of actually buying that ERP from the market, the cost of evaluating it, deploying it, because there are so many functional consultants involved. So when a ERP is rolled out, so say if a particular package has to roll out in a pharma company, then there has to be a actual functional consultant who knows how the business is run, so that this business knowledge can be transformed into IT knowledge, and this IT knowledge has to be translated into the SOPs or the standard operating procedures which are the basis on which the system should run, right? So the cost of implementation is really high. Also, if you look at some of the market leaders of ERP, the cost of licenses are really high. The cost of the compute which host such kind of complex systems are high, right? And last is the implementation cost and the people cost. So I would not really call them as the shortfalls, but then you have to be wary of the fact that if you have to invest in a complex system, then it will come at a cost, right? So these are not disadvantages as such, but then yes, there should be some kind of a check on that. Now let us look at a classification of a ERP system, right? Now ERP, as we said, they are existing in the market, and they've evolved over time. So there are leaders in the market such as SAP or Oracle, which are real complex in nature, and then there are certain tier 2, tier 3 and tier 4 ERPs, depending upon the kind of business, the nature of business, the complexity involved. The businesses can choose their own set of ERP packages, and so we discussed this earlier, right? So ERP, although the 80 to 90% of the package remains common, there is scope for some 10 to 20% of customization. So it's not like a one size fits all. There is some customization needed. So for the mid-level companies, it's better to have a direct package which is catering to the needs, rather than investing in a real big ERP and then customizing it, right? So you actually have to select a optimized ERP for your specific business, right? So it's just like, you know, buying a house depending upon a need. So say if I have a small family, then I should buy or rent a small flat rather than, you know, buying a bungalow and then paying the overhead cost of maintenance, security, water bills, electricity bills, and so on, right? So it's a very common example, right? So whatever is your need, then you have to optimize the solution basis that, or else there will be humongous overhead cost, the licenses cost, and the implementation timelines to actually get that product live, so that the business benefits can be reaped out. So the overall cycle would actually get delayed. So it's very important to understand what is the nature of business, what is it that you really want from the ERP system, and then make a choice to buy a package or probably have it customized, so that it helps you to make your business run faster, right? So it is important when you choose a ERP, whether you look at a tier 1 ERP or a tier 2, basis the business needs, right? So as we mentioned, tier 1 ERPs, these are multinational, multi-site, multi-regional, multi-regional large enterprises the tier 1 ERPs are useful for them. So the likes of say SAP or Oracle that we spoke about, and we'll be discussing in greater details about the SAP and the Oracle, but then again, so the tier 1 ERP has to be designed and implemented keeping the nature of the business into account. And if I talk about tier 2, they actually are one level below the tier 1 in terms of the complexity, in terms of the providing the functional inputs, and also obviously in terms of the cost, right? Because they are tier 2, it will not have so detailed procedures, so detailed workflows as the tier 1 would. So tier 2 are basically suited for the large and the mid-size companies, which would have say typically a few sites, so again, there is no thumb rule that, you know, this ERP cannot be used for mid-sized companies or cannot be used for large organization. But it's basically dependent upon the nature of business and what do you actually want to derive from that ERP. So tier 2 ERP also, I would not degrade them or downgrade them as compared to tier 1, but it's just by the nature of the business, what is the kind of package that you really need, right? And the risk from tier 2 ERP would be that if it comes from a software vendor or ISV, right? ISV, by the way, is an independent software vendor, right, who can make such kind of packages. A small company, by that matter, or it could be a mid-sized company as well. So it could have an inherent risk saying that the company who has made it, if it runs into some kind of financial trouble, then there'll be no one to actually customize your product, or there'll be no one to provide in-life support of that particular product that you've bought. So you have to be wary of the fact that you should actually also examine the financial health of the ERP vendor before onboarding that. So some of the examples of the tier 2 ERP are Microsoft Dynamics. It's really popular in the market. There is Infor, which was previously called BAN. There is Microsoft NAV, and there is Marshall, which is really popular. Tier 3, tier 4, so we spoke about tier 1, the likes of SAP, Oracle. We spoke about tier 2, the likes of Dynamics, the likes of NAV, Orion, QAD, or BAN. And then there are tier 3 and tier 4. So tier 3 again catering to a small business. Tier 4, well, I would rather not call them a real ERP, but then yes, for some set of business it would solve their business needs. So it's a categorization. You can call them as a ERP, but then it's way, way different from a tier 1 ERP, right? So say if I have to look at QuickBooks, right, so it's an example of a tier 3 ERP, something like a Microsoft GP or Peachtree. So these are example of tier 3 ERP. Now for tier 2 and tier 3, the TCO of getting that ERP solution is really important, right? So TCO is nothing but a total cost of business. So the total cost of ownership of that particular ERP system, when it is incorporated in my working environment, then I need to have a lower TCO so that I can bring the business benefits into that. So it is really important that I have a proper balance between the TCO, that is the total cost of ownership, which includes deploying that ERP system in my environment, and the actual business benefits that I get from my ERP system. So it's actually a jugglery between the two, and that's where a company makes a choice between a tier 1 or a tier 2 or a tier 3 or a tier 4. So say if I'm a mid-level company, then I can either go for a tier 1 or a tier 2 or a tier 3. I will definitely not go for a tier 4 because it will not actually address my business needs and customize the ERP product as per my business processes. But then a mid-sized company may choose from say a tier 2 or a tier 3 basis, the cost calculation that we spoke about, the TCO and the capabilities. So just to name a few tier 3 ERPs in the market, we spoke about Microsoft GP, we spoke about Peachtree. Then there are certain others like the Global Shop Solutions, the Harris Data, the Smarter Manager, Visibility, Xtuple. So these are typically the tier 3 ERP system. Now what I've done is I've shown you a Gartner's Magic Quadrant in this particular slide. So this is for 2018, right? And you can see the tier 1, or so in the leaders quadrant you can see that Oracle features here, and then SAP features in the other quadrant. So these are the different vendors and how they are evaluated by Gartner, and they place it and Gartner places them in the magic quadrant, right? So one is we saw that ERP can be classified basis the actual ERP package, tier 1, tier 2, tier 3, tier 4. ERP can be classified as per the line of business in an organization, right? So depending upon the different nature, so say a manufacturing company versus a oil and gas company versus a transportation company versus a retail company. So there are different categorizations by the nature of business, and ERP can be classified basis that, and it can be made. So say there are certain ERP which are very popular in the hospitality space. This would actually completely differ from the manufacturing setup.